So we've started in our series, Big Fat Hypocrite. And when we began all this, I told you this series is going to hurt. It is. It's going to hurt a little bit. It's going to sting. I know that these sermons have to be preached. I know we have to talk about this stuff. I'd rather talk about happy things, you know, and joyful stuff. But it's a part of my job. I got to talk about this. So today, this one's going to sting, okay? It's going to sting a little. And it's not because it's Father's Day, like I'm trying to punish fathers. It's just so happened in the series. The cool thing about fathers, the cool thing about Father's Day, I get to talk about my dad today. And my dad is no longer with us. He passed away in 2007. He had cancer, and he struggled with it for about 2 years. We were lucky enough to grow up in a family where we all believed, you know. And so there's no question where my dad is today. He didn't leave us wondering. In fact, when I got to speak at his funeral, that was one of the things that I was so glad. I was like, I know where he is today. He didn't leave me wondering, oh, do I have to pray him into heaven or anything like that? I know where he is. I know that he's happy. I know that he was a believer in God. And so my dad was a huge, monumental person in my life. He taught me a lot, you know, and he loved us beyond the things in our life, and he showed that by how much money he dumped into sports for me and my brothers. A lot of money. I begin to think that that's what he worked for, was just to pay for our equipment, baseball bats and cleats and all this stuff. It's an expensive sport. You know, you think golf's expensive, you know, it might not be equipment as expensive, but when you travel all the time, go all over the nation, get to play select ball, I was a very spoiled kid. I had a lot of fun playing sports. But my dad, when you get out to a field and you see parents, you know, you got those parents that are just like all about winning, you know, the Tiger Woods dads, you know, you have those things. My dad wasn't one of those dads. My dad even would chastise those types of parents because it's not about that in that moment. If the kid just so happened to be so talented that they could make it into the 1,000,000,000th percentile to make it to the majors, sure, he helped them along and said, yeah, great job, but it wasn't the sports and all that. It wasn't just for to be number one. He had a grander purpose in it for our family and for me and my brothers. I'm the youngest of three, and he used sports to teach us life lessons. And when we would play, right? So my dad, again, it wasn't about being number one. It was about training us and equipping us. And so we would, like, you had your normal team games and stuff like that. He'd go beyond that. He, like, set a practice for, like, 7 a.m. on a Saturday. Can you imagine teenagers wanting to get up at 7 a.m. on a Saturday to go run and work out and practice? We loved baseball, and so that was the thing that got us out there. And so when we got out there, he would, you know, we would do snakes, and, you know, I don't know what snakes are. It's where you're running a line, and the one runs sprints to the front. Yeah, it is terrible. Oh, my gosh, it's horrible. And you doing it in the humidity of Houston, you know, in the morning. And I just remember being in the moment of, why are we doing this? You know, I mean, we're going to be the most fit team, you know, in whatever league that we're in. Why are we doing all this? You know, and I remember struggling it with my head. I didn't understand. But my dad in the time was teaching me a lesson. He was teaching the whole team a lesson. He took this opportunity to do that. There's something that my dad always said, and the more he said it, the more it kind of rang true. Yeah, I'm sure you've heard this statement, practice makes perfect. He took it a step further. He said, practice doesn't make perfect, it makes permanent. We're human. We're not going to be perfect, right? We can always try to achieve it. And that statement is a little too ambiguous to say, what's perfection? So Dad made it more realistic, and he said it makes permanent the more you do it. I didn't realize it at the time, but my dad could see the future of my life. He could see what he's teaching me in that moment and how it was going to affect me for the future. And he was teaching me integrity. He was teaching me to stay true to values despite of how bad it was in the moment, despite of how much it hurt. And so I'm now lucky enough to do as my dad did, and I get to teach my son integrity. So this month, we joined a soccer league for Gage, right? And Gage is four. He's barely old enough to be in the league. It was 6-under league, 4 years old, and right. So I knew, like, this is the first time he's ever been exposed to teams, first time he's ever been exposed to, like, an organized sport, that type of stuff. He's got the energy. He has the ability. He has all that, but just the, hey, you got to stay on this field and you got to do this. So the first day was Ooh, it was something. They were in lack of a head coach, and they were desperate. And I foolishly marked off, I'll be an assistant coach, you know. And they called me, and it's like, well, we need a head coach. Will you be the head coach? And I'm like, oh, I don't know anything about soccer. And they're like, that's okay. And I'm like, oh, you must be really desperate. So I said, okay, I'll do it. And so I get out there, and luckily there's some awesome dads out there that's played soccer, and they know what they're doing. So they pretty much took over, right? And I'm a glorified receptionist. I handle everything as far as sending emails out and make sure everybody's on schedule and things like that, and giving all the kids high fives and say, great job, you know, way to go. I get them to cheer. They name them Tigers, and I say, go Tigers, go, and I get them to say, it's the cutest thing ever. But the first day, so we got into it, and Gage is, he's getting it for a moment, right? We're running drills, and then all of a sudden he darts off to the fence. And so then I had to chase after him. And he gets all the way to the fence, and I said, son, what are you doing? And a week before, I took him to a field trying to teach him soccer, and he had to pee-pee. And there's nothing around, we were alone, so I took him to the back fence and let him pee through the fence. He thought it was the greatest thing ever. And so he thought that's what you do normally. So when I got to him the fence, I said, son, what are you doing? And he said, daddy, I gotta go potty. And I'm like, oh no, son, not around all these people. And so we take him to go potty, and then after that, we get him back, and he's there for a second, and then he doesn't understand that he's supposed to stay on his own field, and so then he's running off to all these other fields, because he looks out, and he sees 100 kids all playing and kicking balls, and he wants to go play with all of them. He's very friendly, and so there's a lot of things, and then it's hot, and so then it gets to a point, so we're about 15 minutes into this thing, and he's like, I want to go home. It's hot. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm like, son, no, we committed to this. You're a part of a team now. And I had to keep telling him, you're a part of a team. You're a part of a team. You're a part of this. You're supposed to stay with your team, support them. You're supposed to learn, you know, just keep, trust me, it would have been much easier to say, all right, son, let's go home. Let's just go home. I'd rather be sitting in air conditioning right now, all these things. I that's what I would sip in lemonade in my recliner. You know, that's what I'd rather be doing in that moment. So in comfort, I could again, yeah, let's do that. Let's go home. But I know that I'm teaching him a lesson in this. And I know that this moment is shaping his integrity. It's shaping his ability to strengthen his will to stay committed to something. It's a very important thing. And so I'm doing it with Gage right now, and so I got another one coming that I get to do it with him as well. Man, there's going to be two of them at once. Oh, geez, it's going to get expensive. It's a very important lesson to learn. It's a very important thing to teach a child, because if you teach them when they're young, then their integrity grows as they get older. Have you ever met an adult with low integrity? It's not a very appealing thing. It's really not. They can't hold a job. They can't keep anything going on. They anytime they're around somebody, it's like, oh, they kind of avoid them because they can't ever hold to what the words that they say. When they say they're going to do something, they don't do it. We've new in this community, you meet a lot of people, and I've already pretty much picked out the people that have low integrity. I already know who they are. Not that I hate them or anything different about them, but there's been moments where they've said, I'm in, I'm full, let's do this. And then you never see them again, you know, and then you invested and you counted on them, and you begin to see what motivates them. Typically, what motivates a person with low integrity is money. As long as there's money involved, they'll be there. But there's no money, they won't be there. You know what I'm saying? It's a very important thing. And this is something we all struggle with. This is every human being has struggled with the level of integrity that they have in forming it. Because jobs get hard. You get a new boss that you don't like. You get a new client that you don't like. You lose a client. You get a new employee, a new cubicle buddy that it doesn't know hygiene. You know, that type of thing. Or they talk too much. Or whatever it means. Jobs get hard. So then it gets harder to get up and say, I'm committed to this. I'm committed to what I'm doing. What's next? Relationships. That's a big one. Relationships get hard. When you're married for, you know, we always say that the married couple doesn't really hit their stride until 3 years. That's when they hit their stride. And so prior to that, there's a lot of bumping heads, man. It gets difficult because you're creating a life together. because you were separate for before that. And so you're molding yourselves. That gets hard. There comes times when you want to give up on that. Family. That's the next thing with marriage and just your own family. Family is difficult. Family is here, and a lot of my family is here today. And so I'm sorry to say that, but I love my family. There's not a family out there that doesn't have its level of difficulty. And it's all different. It's humans. That's just the way we are. We're not perfect. And so there's people that want to give up on family. They want to give up on it because it's hard. And if you've gotten that point before, if you've done that, I'm not saying you're evil. It's justified. There's justification in it. It's easy to do. What's next? Life. Life in general just gets hard. You can't pay your mortgage. You miss a rent payment. Your car breaks down. You lose your job. Your roof caves in from a storm. All these things, just life in general, gets hard. Or you're just one of those people that's clumsy. You're always hurting yourself. You're always bumping your head. You're always burning. You know, it just happens. It gets hard. I'm not talking just about my wife. She burns herself sometimes. I love you, honey. You were laughing. I don't want you to point that out. I should have said that right then. That was a bad idea. You see? That way I just, yes, I rewind, delete that from the podcast. She didn't burn herself today, which is really cool because a lot of bacon being fried up. We come to those moments, and this is where it hinges, is that we can justify it. We can justify not wanting to give up. We can justify not to continue to not have integrity. Being able to finish something, it's not just something that we like. This is actually a spiritual virtue. This is something that God notices. And there's a story, a very prominent story in Scripture, and it's a very long one. I know we have limited time here, so I'm going to condense it down for you, but it's the story of Job. I'm going to briefly go through it if you don't know the story of Job. Job was an awesome man. He had, as far as we can tell historically in Scripture, he was the man that's had the most integrity up until who he was. But prior to him, this was God's most pleasing person as far as integrity goes. And so because of that, Job exemplified so many things. He was very loving. His love had no bounds. His family was very vast and loving. He was very rich. He was very blessed. His respect for God and respect for the land, for his creation, his purpose, he was very good at it. He had very great integrity, right? And God was very pleased with him. So Satan comes around, right? And Satan doesn't like this, of course. Satan doesn't like God. And it peeved Satan off when he sees his creation loving God and God loving the creation. He wants to break that connection. So Satan goes to God and he says, God, I know why he does this. I know why he acts this way. It's because he has everything. His life is perfect. I bet if he took everything away, he wouldn't have such integrity. God's like, okay, all right. God knew Job so well. See, God's the only one that can truly see our hearts. He's the only one that can truly see what's inside of us and our limitations, how far we can go. We lie to each other all the time about how far we can get. But Job, God knew Job. He knew his heart. And he said, okay, do your worst, but you can't take his life. You can't kill him. But do your worst, and we'll see what happens. I have faith in Job. So he does. In one day, Job gets all these notifications by carrier, by message, whatever is that his. He's lost his complete, all of his cattle. He lost them all. All of his herds. He's lost all of his crops. He's lost all of them. He's lost all of his family. They all died. All killed. All of his children. He lost all of his land. All of his riches. Everything was being wiped out from his life. Satan's doing all this to him. And Job was still holding to his integrity. And then God goes, okay, we'll take a step further. You can inflict him physically. So then Satan comes along, gives him boils, makes him sick, makes him miserable. Now, through this time, I know that you're picturing just a smiling guy. He wasn't taking this easy. Job wasn't taking this easy, and he had no knowledge of the conversation between God and Satan. As far as he knew, he had just been hit by a tidal wave of sorrow and pain and destruction, to the point where he has a Britney Spears moment. He rips off all of his clothes. He shaves his head, rolls in the dirt, sits in the mud, and mourns and writhes, and it's just pondering, what has happened? What did I do? Who did something? And so he just mourned and mourned and mourned. And then there's this moment that comes along. It's kind of like the nail in the coffin. When you're married, for those of you who aren't married, when you're married, the spouse that you have, man, those words have weight. A lot of weight to me, because that's like, y'all are one now. Y'all love each other. It means everything to each other. And so we find in Job 2, 9 through 10, this is what happens. Be on the screen. Then his wife said to him, "Do you still hold fast your integrity? Curse God and die." This is his wife. "Curse God and die." But he said to her, "You speak as one of those foolish women over there would speak. Shall we receive good from God, and shall we not receive evil?" In all this, Job did not sin with his lips. Now, let me explain that last part, sin with his lips. Sin, and this is something that we've failed as a church culture, as saying sin is like it's an action, it's a one thing that you do. That's not what sin is. Sin is the separation from you, God. So anything that separates you from God is sin. That's what that is, that's separation. Why would the creation want to be separated from its creator? Why would we want that? We begin to dilute our lives and begin to have that disconnection. So even in this moment, Job is not privy to the conversation. He has no idea what's going on. He's struggling. He's writhing on the ground. And his wife tells him, "You still hold fast to this integrity that you have? What's it worth? Why do you hold it? Nobody has come to your aid. God has not seen mercy on you, so just curse God and die." I told you today wasn't going to be easy. This is going to hurt. It's a little painful. Shortly after this, Job's friends, they saw him. They felt bad for him. They came and they sat with him for a long period of time, and they mourned with him. And their minds are working, and they're. It's always funny when you're in a bad place. It's like everybody else knows what your problem is. You ever been there? Everybody knows exactly what's going on in your life. We've all been there, and it's almost comical. You know, you almost laugh to yourself, but you're in so much pain in the moment. It's like, whatever, just say your piece and move on. And so in this moment, his friends begin to talk, and they come at him from all different ways. And all they could figure out is that somehow he has done something wrong. He has sinned in some way. He's offended God in some way. He's not living right. He has some kind of affliction, something like that. But Job holds his ground. See, Job knows his God. He's been with God in his plenty. He knew God. And so he said, "No, none of that's true." He cursed his friends and said, "Get out of here. I rebuke you guys. Get out of this. Get out of this place. Don't stop filling my head with this garbage that I've done something wrong." Even in this moment, even when his friends try to come convince him, he did not sin with his lips. He did not say, even though he's just this torment, he has himself sitting there, and now that his friends have filled his head with this stuff, he's sitting there and he's pondering, why? Why is this happening to me? Why is this happening? Why, you know, I'm sure you could, if anybody in history ever had a justified reason to quit, it was Job. Everything stricken from him, all of it taken away, and still he did not abandon his purpose. He didn't understand what it was coming or why he had it. He did not sin with his lips. He did not abandon his faith and separate himself from God. So towards the end of his encounter, toward the end of this moment, he had an encounter with God. God finally came to him. I can't remember. Think about it. If you just had no, it's like you've been cut off from everything, and then finally God comes to you, and you've shaved your head, you've stripped all your clothes off, you're dirty, you've at the, if there was an end of a rope, that rope is way down the road, and you found a new rope, now you found the end of that rope. You know, it's kind of like it just keeps going and going and going. So he finally has this moment with God. He has this moment, and God speaks to him and reveals to him. God berates him with questions. Because he's, at this point, he's angry with God. He's angry with him, and that's okay. God can handle our anger. He can handle that. So he's angry with God, and he's questioning. And then God just lamb blasts him with all these questions. And what he begins to learn and he helps Job to see is that this goes far beyond Job in his life, far beyond his world, far beyond what he can fathom of the universe. God is so vast. The understanding is so beyond us that he begins to realize just how small he is and how much of it a blessing it was for him to have the plenty in the time that he had it. He began to understand. It was revealed to him. It's in this moment he learned that God was not angry at him. He finally got confirmation. God was never angry with him. It's just life. It just happens. He had it in the worst way, and he had Satan directly locked in on him, but that's just life. Sometimes we think that God, in this moment, I'm sure Job was going through it, that God enforces evil upon us, like he's mad at us. So then we hurt ourselves. We bring pain upon ourselves. We rip off our clothing. We shave our heads. We have Britney Spears moments, like as if we've done this. We're trying to, whatever we can do to accept the responsibility for, to get away from what's happening to us. But we see that Job is the definition of human integrity. Of human understanding, human ability, he is the definition of human integrity. Now, because he realized this and he acknowledged that, God, it's just life. You're not mad at me. I love you regardless. And he even goes as far as to, because God is then angry with his friends that came and tried to fool him and tried to tell him that hey, God. He can go as far as, Lord, I pray for them. They didn't understand. I pray for them. Have mercy on them, because God was ready to bring some smite, because they had came and filled the head of his one of his favorite human beings. And so because he understood this, and because he went the extra mile to pray for his friends, and it says in Job 42:10, and the Lord restored the fortunes of Job when he prayed for his friends, and the Lord gave Job twice as much as he had before. In God's grace, he honored Job's integrity and gave him everything back and then some. He got his family back. It's even listed out in Scripture. If you go read it, it's like this many times this many and this many times this many. He got it back double, fold. Awesome thing. And it's because he held fast to his integrity. I know we all want to have integrity. We want to tell people we have integrity. In your life, when you went on a job interview, they ask you if you have integrity. And you're like, yeah, I got integrity. Because they want to know that you're going to stick there with the job, even though it gets hard. And you're getting married. That's another thing that a spouse wants to know. Do you have integrity? Are you going to stick through this with me through thick and thin, even when it gets hard? Do you have the integrity to do that? And we want to say yes, because it feels good to say yes. It feels good to say, yes, I will stick with you when it gets hard, because at that point, it's just an ideal. But things fall apart around you. You don't know why. You begin to think that God's angry with you, or angry with your marriage, or angry about something. I'm telling you today, regardless of what you're going through in your life today, God is not angry with you, okay? Whatever you're suffering through in this moment, God is not mad at you. He loves you. He's proud of you. He wants to see good in your life. One of Job's friends, one of the things that one of them kind of, he was on the right track a little bit. One of the last friends that spoke, I can't even pronounce his name, so I'm not going to try. But he began to say, maybe this is a moment, this is an opportunity for you to show your faith, to show your integrity. Anytime you hit these rough patches in your life that you want to give up, that is your opportunity to show God that you have the integrity, that when he believed in you and blessed your life in plenty, that when you lose that plenty or in that rough moment, that you're going to hold your faith and continue to believe in him. And when you do that, God gets to open the floodgates for you. He gets to have the opportunity to be proud of you. Have an integrity that God could be proud of in your life. There's a story that I found. As human beings, there's a part of living that we discount. There's a part that we forget about. It's when we start something, it's hard. So this is the story. It's a really cool story. The Olympic Games, Mexico, in 1968. The marathon is the final event on the program. The Olympic Stadium is packed, and there's excitement as the first athlete, an Ethiopian runner, of course, enters the stadium. The crowd erupts. He crosses the finish line. They're going nuts. Now, way back in the fields, there's another runner. His name is John Stephen Akwari, I had to look that up, of Tanzania. He has been eclipsed by the other runners. After 30 kilometers, his head is throbbing, his muscles are aching, and he falls to the ground. He has serious leg injuries, and the officials want him to retire, but he refuses. Now, some of you have been runners. You know a taste of what this is. He refuses, though. With his knee bandaged, Akwari picks himself up and hobbles the remaining 12 kilometers to the finish line. An hour after the winner has finished, Akwari enters the stadium. All but a few thousand of the crowd have gone home. Akwari moves around the track at a painstakingly slow pace until finally he collapses over the finish line. It's one of the most heroic efforts in Olympic history. Afterward, asked by a reporter why he had not dropped out, Akwari says, "My country did not send me to start a race. They sent me to finish." God did not create you to start your life with integrity. He created you to finish your life with integrity, to hold fast despite what happens in this moment in life, to keep your faith. It's this type of integrity, just like Job, that can change your life and the lives around you. Because this type of integrity is contagious. It's this type of integrity that my father taught me. It's this type of integrity that most your parental figures taught you, or whoever that might be. It's this type of integrity that changes life. So this week, here's the challenge. I want you to evaluate yourself. Evaluate those rough moments in your life, but not just how bad it was in that moment. I want you to evaluate, how did you react to that moment? When your friend got the promotion over you, were you happy for them or were you jealous? Did you curse them when you weren't around? Did you hold integrity? Hey, and I'm not saying you're evil if you've done it. I've done it. I've been jealous. I've cursed people behind their backs because of my lack of integrity. But it's in these moments that it gets revealed to you. You get to look back and evaluate those things. Evaluate your integrity. Do you hold fast? How does your integrity weather life's circumstances? So do you have real integrity, or are you a big fat hypocrite? Make that decision. And so as we group together as a church, as this family gathers, we begin to define individually our integrity, begins to define Village Heights as a whole. Village Heights integrity. We have an image to this community. We communicate something to this community. And we work really hard to keep it showing that we have strong integrity. And integrity, a love of integrity that it communicates, that it loves this community regardless of our differences. That's a big one with church. When you have a difference with somebody in the community, are you still going to love them? Because that's what Christ called us to do. Are you going to have the integrity to do that? The other one Are we going to keep our faith regardless of circumstances, regardless of a low Sunday, regardless of we're in lack of funds, regardless of the power's out in the building? Are we going to keep our faith, or is it circumstantial that it, when it feels good, that we'll keep it? Are we going to have strong integrity, regardless of our circumstances, to hold fast to our faith? We must be constantly evaluating Village Heights, constantly doing that. If we do that as a family, Village Heights will have the integrity that will affect all of us and this community in a powerful way. It's already happening. I have been awarded some major opportunities in the past month to love on this community, and it came out of nowhere, absolutely out of nowhere. They Googled me. They found me. So then I get to speak next to the congresswoman of our area. I get to speak next to her. Some of you don't know this, but last Sunday after church, I got an emergency phone call to head down to the federal building to speak in a live press conference. Talk about pressure. They gave me 30 minutes to put a suit on and get there. I had no idea what I was going to say. But I got to, in front of live cameras, speak truth, love, despite our differences, that nobody should deserve such tragedy that happened in Florida. And being able to speak that, man, what a powerful moment. But if I didn't have integrity, I don't even know if God would bless me with that opportunity. Because if I didn't have integrity, I would have taken that moment to point out our differences, to justify myself as if I deserve something or I'm better than somebody else. But because of the integrity of Village Heights, we continue to get opportunity and opportunity to minister this community. But that starts with each of us. That starts with each individual soul here that decides to have high integrity, a Job-like integrity, that regardless of where we're feeling in the moment, that we are still going to love in a way that's beyond our understanding. Let's be the example of integrity for our community. God didn't call us just to start a church. He called us to finish as his church, as his creation, as people that band together and to love this community. So let's not let Village Heights also become a big, fat hypocrite. I'm going to pray. And again, I challenge you guys. And this one, I didn't direct it directly toward fathers or anything like that, but this is as a whole. And we have something for you guys, for your fathers, actually male. If you're a male and you're here, at some point in your life, you're going to have the opportunity to father. You're going to have the opportunity to invest, to show somebody younger than you how to have integrity, to teach them. And so we have something for you guys so that we appreciate you. So take that. And also eat all the bacon. I thank you guys for being here. I thank you for taking a risk on us, taking this to show up here on Sunday and say, hey, we believe in what we're doing here. Thank you so much. I couldn't ask for a better group of people with such high integrity. Let's continue to develop it. Let's continue to get better at it. Let's be the example of it in the Heights. I love you guys. Lord, I thank you so much for this moment. I thank you so much for revealing to us what true integrity is, Lord. I'm sorry that Job had to go through it, God. I'm sorry that he had to show us what it looked like to be integrity, but Lord, what a great opportunity to be the example for all of humanity of what true integrity is to our God. Lord, I pray that we can just even get a portion, just be a portion of Job's integrity, Lord, and we can be world changers. Lord, I thank you so much for Job. Lord, I pray right now, Lord, he's getting more crowns. He's getting more jewels in heaven, whatever it may be, bacon, whatever it may be in heaven that he's getting. I pray that he's getting it because it's well-deserved, because he stayed faithful and had integrity. Lord, I pray that we can exemplify such integrity, Lord. Strengthen us, empower us. Holy Spirit, reveal to us the moments where our integrity is low, that we need to strengthen it. Lord, keep us safe, and I pray this message gets planted down deep in our hearts so that we can bring it back up when we need it. Lord, we love you, give you all the praise and all the honor. Amen.